Hello, and welcome to Talking Story. I'm your host, Lynn Hadley, and I'm here today with Constance Wiseman,
who
is a Napa resident and president of the Columbia Memorial Hospital Board of Trustees, an active employee for the last 12 years with Thrivent, a financial consulting organization.
Yes.
And also has been had a career as a chemical engineer for 27 years with Wana Paper Mill, and an artist and many things. And we hope to address her work. She's spent several years working in cooperation with Thrivent and Habitat for Humanity to visit over six places in this world to lend a hand in creating homes and habitats for folks in need. And that's a wonderful thing. Thank you for being here today.
Thank you for having me, Lynn.
Would you like to talk about what led you to your work with Thrivent and the Habitat for Humanity?
Sure. Like you mentioned, I spent 27 years as an engineer working at the Wana Mill, and it was a great career. Worked with some wonderful people and had some great experiences there, but I started to get that feeling that it was time for that career to be finished and started researching what I might like to do next, and kind of bumped into the opportunity as a financial planner and advisor with Thrivent. Thrivent's a not-for-profit company, which is a little different than most financial companies. And as a not-for-profit, they put money back into the community. We're member-owned, like a cooperative. And so through our members, we contribute to organizations that our members care about. A lot of that money is done locally, and you'll see there are local Thrivent projects that members here in the community do. But also on a larger scale, internationally, one of the organizations our members care about a lot is Habitat for Humanity. And so we support builds in the United States. About, I believe, we're over 400 builds that we have completely supported in domestically. But also,
and
we do...
By support, you mean Thrivent employees are volunteering to help build it, contributing materials, and 100% on board with the creation of it?
On the domestic builds in the United States, Thrivent provides 75% of the funds for the building materials, and then the volunteers come from the local communities, both Thrivent members and others who choose to volunteer on those builds.
So you participated domestically for a while before you got involved internationally?
I have done some domestic builds. Longview has a very strong program. St. Helens has a very strong program. There are several builds, and there are several Habitat affiliates in the Portland area that build on a continuous basis, and all of those areas have had houses that Thrivent provided the funding for, as well as other houses. They do a lot of houses every year in those.
And there are three different programs as far as like maintaining it. They go back to help with repairs, and then there was another part to it as well, I believe.
There's a maintenance part. There's the disaster relief response, you know, after the floods and hurricanes in the Texas area. Anytime there's a national disaster, Thrivent will come in and help with the rebuilding effort at Thrivent in partnership with Habitat for Humanity.
Well, that's wonderful. And as of 2016, there were over, I think, close to 5,000 houses that had been built. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if that's locally. I mean, not locally, but in
the United States.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
And quite a bit of money spent on materials in over 44 countries. Mm-hmm. When did you? Well, so back in 2008, you said, "Hey, I want to build a house in Madagascar." How did that happen?
So I decided that I wanted to try an international build. I thought it would be a nice way to combine a little bit of international travel with doing something that I would enjoy. And the nice thing about doing something like an international build is you get to meet the local people. You get a much better exposure to their culture, their food, than you would as simply as a tourist. So Madagascar was the first country I went to. It was extremely interesting country to visit. We were based in the capital in Antananarivo, and our build was about 45 minutes from there. It was interesting because most of the people in the village where we were building would never in their lifetime travel to the capital, even though it was about 30 miles. And that's just hard to imagine to me that someone might live somewhere their entire life with never traveling more than 30 miles from their home base. That was the poorest country, I believe, that I've built in. The houses we were building there were made out of adobe brick, but it wasn't really fired. What they would do is they would make the bricks in a wooden mold, dry them in the sun, and then stack them up into kind of a cone, and then use rice hulls to fire them. And so I really felt like a woman there because I could take these adobe bricks, score them, and crack them with one hand, like with a karate chop. Yeah, makes you feel super strong, but it's really because the bricks were super weak. But those houses were built, dirt floors, adobe brick. With my engineering background, there was another engineer on the job, and we would constantly joke about what OSHA would think of what we were doing because when you do one of these builds, there's always what they call their contractors, but they're master craftsmen. They're the people who know how to lay the bricks so that the wall will stand up and not come down. And so the master craftsmen would ride their bicycles 2 hours one way to the job site in the morning. They would take off their boots. Two of them had boots, one of them did not. Take off their boots when they got to the job to keep their boots good and work barefoot or in flip-flops, basically to protect the boots, which were very precious to them. And we built scaffolding. We went to the lumber yard to build scaffolding so we could put the bricks up onto, you know, get them up to the higher levels of the walls. And the scaffolding was built out of what I would consider like alder brush, you know, like maybe 2 to 3 inch diameter little sticks. And wow. We purchased these from the lumber yard and built scaffolding out of them. We purchased an exact number of nails. When we were done with the scaffolding, we pulled the nails out and straightened them out so they could use them again. It just very different than the standards on a job in this country.
Right.
And then, of course, we were going up on that scaffolding with, you know, the equivalent of like a pallet of bricks that we would pass up there, up on the scaffolding with us. It was quite entertaining.
Yes. Did everybody make it through?
Everyone survived. No injuries on the job.
Very good.
And there we made the mortar just out of mud from a hole. And
wow.
Their toilet was just literally a little kind of a shack built around a hole in the ground.
Wow.
And you had to have good aim.
So so the it must have been a very welcome thing to have the assistance, but it sounds like the materials would have been fairly readily available if it were mud brick and mud mortar.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they just literally in the mortar, we just dug a hole in the yard and stirred it up with a big stick. One of the things that's hard sometimes for people the first time they go on an international build is to understand that you are going to build with the materials and the equipment that's locally available. You don't bring any tools. You don't go, and of course there will be times you go like, oh my gosh, I just wish I had my power drill.
Yes.
Or even a hammer. I mean, sometimes the tool they give you is so pathetic. It could be a shovel that's just very flimsy, but you work with the local materials and the local tools.
Is that mostly so that things could be mended or repaired and easily enough because it would be readily available to replace? That's
one piece of it. For example, if you brought in a cement mixer, it would be fine as long as until they weren't able to repair it. But also there's no electricity on the job site because there's no electricity in the homes. And there won't be. These homes were made out of adobe brick. There's no glass in the windows. The roof is made out of straw, just thatch roof.
Wow.
And so,
and I would guess that those materials are quite different from when you were, say, you were in Argentina or Macedonia.
Mm-hmm. So Argentina, we built with concrete block. And actually there, when you come in on a team, you don't know what you're going to be doing for sure. You may have a little bit of an idea. But in Argentina, we came into a home that was already, it was concrete block, but it was already the walls were up, and so we were at the phase where we were finishing the walls with stucco, painting it, and installing tile floors. And so, and the homes in Argentina had glass in the windows. When we went to Nicaragua, the people were living in it. It is almost unbelievable to believe that someone could be living in this, but it was, you know, the corrugated metal sheeting that you might see on a barn roof here or a shed roof. That was their walls. That was their roof. Their floor was dirt. What broke my heart there is that the babies don't crawl, because if they were to put the babies down to crawl on that dirt floor, there's spiders and scorpions, and it's just dangerous. And so the baby has nowhere to crawl, and it affects them developmentally.
Wow.
The other thing that sticks in my mind from Nicaragua is that one out of every four children dies before the age of five. And so you have to think, every family there has lost a child. Every grandmother, every father, every aunt, every uncle has seen a baby die.
Wow. Well, that makes it all the more pertinent, I would think, to be able to help out in a situation like that.
Yeah, and there we were able to take them from that corrugated metal shack to a concrete block house with actual glass windows and a concrete floor.
Wow.
So the baby will be able to crawl.
Wonderful.
It was really touching when I was there, because the little boy was a little dark curly-haired boy, exactly the same age as my grandson, who's, of course, blonde curly-haired.
Uh-huh.
It was so fun to look at this little boy and think, that's little Max, except it was David. He was... And, of course, one of the things we get to do on the job site is during our breaks, we'll play with the children, you know, throw a ball for them. Their toys are very rudimentary. Sticks, old bicycle wheels, you know, nothing like what toys we have here for children.
Yeah. Are you tempted to, after you return home, to send things to... and keep connection with these families?
That's a really good point, and that is strictly prohibited. Keeping contact with the family, or bringing toys. We can bring things like color books or crayons, chalk, things that we can let the children use while we're there, but there's a real problem with jealousy in the other children in the neighborhood, and you can actually put a child at risk for injury if you give them a toy that's significantly better than what the other children have. If you bring something like, say, balls, then you give them to the Habitat people and they will donate them to the school, so they're shared equally by all the children. But yes, that's a really important point.
Oh, well, I'm sure, just like understanding the culture and the politics of a situation, you can't just go into a community and say, hi, we're here to build a house for you, right?
Mm-hmm. And it's really important that you're not trying to change their culture. You're not building, again, back to the building to their standards. If you were to build a home that's very different from everyone else's, that would be a very uncomfortable situation for that family.
I was headed off to Peace Corps, and this friend of mine, he said, who was also, we were going together, and his idea was that when we got to our service in Africa, that you would be able to, that there would be like, this addresses what you were saying. There would be one family or one child that had a sponsor, you know. Mm-hmm. So they'd be sitting there in like a bow tie and a jacket and all like sparkly, shiny. Mm-hmm. And then there was everybody else who was just stuck with whatever they had.
Mm-hmm.
But luckily, it's not like that.
Yeah.
You can help a whole family and be mindful of the fact of what that does in the community.
Yeah, you just don't bring them material goods. Again, things that you can do with them, you can engage with them with sidewalk chalk or crayons are fine.
Okay. Well, I'm Lynn Hadley here, your host with Talking Story, and we're here today with Constance Wiseman, and she's talking about her experience with Thrivent Builds and with Habitat for Humanity internationally. So nice to have you here. And
thank you, Lynn.
I hope you could continue to tell us more about your experiences. Culturally, it's a very diverse list. You've been in Madagascar, Macedonia, Argentina, Nicaragua, Paraguay, and most recently Cambodia. Would you like to talk about your recent trip in Cambodia?
Yes. When we went to Cambodia, I kind of assumed, because I have seen pictures of builds in Cambodia and Vietnam before, that we would be building with concrete block because that's a very common building material there. But in fact, we were building outside of Siem Reap, and again, about 30 miles outside the city limits. And we built a stick frame house up on stilts. And of course, the immediate reaction we all had was, well, it's up on stilts because it floods. And it is a very, very wet area. It's near Tonle Sap, which is the largest freshwater lake in Southeast Asia. But in fact, the reason they put them up on stilts is twofold. One is to get the house up where it's a little cooler in the evening, because it's very, very hot there. We were there in the cool season. It was 95. Yes, when you're from Astoria, 95 is on your very hot list. And so the house was built up on stilts, no running water, no plumbing, no electricity. The floor was made of, and it's kind of hard to visualize this, when we think of bamboo flooring, we think of the manufactured bamboo flooring we have in this country. Well, their flooring was bamboo, but they had actually split off sticks of bamboo. It was about maybe a little over an inch wide. And I think you know what the thickness of bamboo is like, and it has a little bit of curvature to it. That was the floor. That was laid over the studs, and that was it. There was no underlayment. There was no carpet on top of that. That's the floor. And, of course, there were gaps between it. And no glass in the windows. They did have rebar in the windows, and I believe that was that a child couldn't fall out of the window. And they did have shutters on them for the rain, but no glass. And so if you can visualize this stick frame house, probably about 16 feet square, up on stilts, and that was basically their sleeping area. And then underneath the house, when the weather was not wet, they would use that as a living area. They would store their rice there. Whatever they had to store would be stored under there. The kitchen for this particular family will be in their old house, which I would estimate it was about 8 feet by maybe 10 feet. And this is a family of six, six children. So two adults, six children. Obviously, they weren't all fitting in there. Some of the children were farmed out to other family members because they couldn't all sleep in their home. So that will become their kitchen now after the new house is built. And we did build a bathroom. It was a brick building big enough to hold a toilet. Excuse me, I'm going to get a bit of water. But no plumbing to the toilet. Basically, they have a cistern that collects water off the eaves. You dip water out of the cistern to flush. And one of the improvements we were making is they did have a septic system on this so that the waste material wasn't contaminating groundwater. And so it was really interesting to build wood frame construction, because I haven't done that on any of the other builds I've been on. It's always been adobe or concrete. The other thing I found very interesting there, and my favorite person on the job site, was the grandmother. She was 85 years old. I'd be willing to bet most of the listeners that they're not as flexible as she is. She was like a little yogi, just, I don't know, maybe not 100 pounds even. Little tiny woman. Interestingly enough, she was a Buddhist nun. She had a shaved head. And she, of course, spoke no English. But she and I were able to communicate. I shared pictures of my grandchildren with her. And, of course, her grandchildren were there. And she just had a presence to her that was remarkable. She was very much in awe of us Westerners, because she had never met a foreigner before. Again, think about that. 30 miles from a major city, a major metropolitan city that's full of tourists. She's never met a foreigner.
And in all her 85 years.
In 85 years.
Wow. Yeah.
So she was just a remarkable woman to be in her presence.
Well, that must be a great reward for you, to be able to work closely with people that you can offer help to, and they can offer their friendship and appreciation for what you're doing.
Mm-hmm. And it's just fun seeing the appreciation on their faces. The other thing I had fun doing there was some of the children were playing in a tree, and so I shot a video with my camera, or with my phone. And when I showed her the video, they just burst into giggles. They had never seen themselves on film before. And it was the funniest thing in the world to them. They just laughed and laughed and laughed. It was so charming.
That's fun.
Yeah.
And you were talking about Macedonia. We were talking about that a little bit earlier. That was maybe like politically a little bit challenging, or maybe not so much in that regard.
Yes, but Macedonia is politically a very interesting country. There's a big disconnect between the people and their government. The government does a lot of government spending on things like statues that, while the people are basically in need, and they don't take care of the people very well. And so there's there was, at the time we were there, they were having what they call a color war. They were taking like paint guns and shooting the statues with paint to show their displeasure with government spending. And when I say statues, it's Skopje is unbelievable. I mean, you could not imagine a city with more statues. It's kind of Disney-esque. Very, very strange. And so, and then the other political situation is the relationship between them and Greece is quite politically charged. There's not a lot of love lost between the two. And so it was kind of an interesting place to be that way.
And what was the building situation there? Were you dealing with a whole new set of things?
Yes. And so, again, what's happening there is that the young people in the rural areas can't find work. And so they need to move into the metropolitan areas. And there's a shortage of housing. And so what we worked on there was an apartment building. And it would have, they were building a series of 5 apartment buildings. And each one, let's see, 4, I think each one had 12 apartments in it. And so we were able to meet one of the young families that was going to receive the apartment and their children, their young children. They were so appreciative. They invited our entire team, and this was a very large team, our entire team to their home village, to their home, and served us a Macedonian homemade dinner in their courtyard. It was, including their homemade grappa, which is definitely fire water. But it was so fun. The food was amazing. The Macedonians have a great generosity of food spirit. They really like to overfeed you. And anytime we ate there was just a lot of food. Very, very generous that way.
Would you say it was a kind of Mediterranean in style?
Yes, it would be. The two foods that I remember eating there that I was absolutely blown away by. It's hard to imagine this. Now, you can imagine a really good tomato.
Sure.
Okay. The tomatoes there were better than the best tomatoes I've ever eaten in this country. And I grew up in the Midwest, okay? So I'm not comparing them to Oregon tomatoes or hothouse tomatoes. The tomatoes were amazing. But what was more amazing was the cucumbers. You think of a cucumber as not having a particularly lot of flavor, but the cucumbers there were the best I've ever eaten. I've never tasted a cucumber as good as those before or since. They were just amazing. They do a lot of gardening. You know, everyone's got their little garden plot. They grow a lot of red peppers. That's kind of their main garnish. But yeah, the food was fantastic.
Is it a red pepper with heat, or is it more
a sweet red pepper?
Oh, okay.
Yeah, a sweet red pepper. But you'd go by the houses, and they would have racks and racks of them drying, because we were there in September, so in their fall. They'd have all these racks of red peppers drying to make their red pepper. It's like a red pepper paste they put on everything.
Wow. So was that project longer than, are you typically gone for just a week, or?
Usually the build will go, if you go on to basically a Thrivent build, it'll be usually you get there the first day, you have a day of some kind of cultural activities to get to know the area, and then you have an orientation from the local habitat group, certainly giving you what things are faux pas. For example, in Cambodia, women do not expose their shoulders. They're very modest. Yeah, 95 degrees. No tank tops. Okay? And so they'll give you that kind of cultural orientation. They'll help you understand what certain hand signals mean, things that you should or shouldn't do.
For mostly probably safety on the work site, I would think would be helpful.
There's that, and just really respectfulness. I mean, really the deep rootedness is just to be respectful of the culture and understand that things that we see maybe is, you know, there are countries, for example, where you never point. If you want to point, if you want to direct someone's attention to something, you use the flat of your hand, but not your pointer finger. Things like that, just to make sure that you're culturally comfortable. And then, of course, to go over safety and all those other things, too. And then usually you'll build for 5 days. And then on the fifth day, out at whatever completion point you're at, you'll have a celebration with the family and with the community. And those can vary from being a small celebration. In Cambodia, their celebratory activity is to take talcum powder, you put it on your hands, and you walk around and slap each other on the cheek and cover each other with talcum powder. And so we were dancing and slapping each other on the cheek with talcum powder. It was really quite fun. Messy.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, clean kind of mess. Nothing too dangerous.
Is that refreshing in 95 degree heat?
Not particularly. Smelled like a baby, though.
Well, you got to have your celebratory powder dance with the Cambodians. Well, we touched on this a little bit, but as we kind of wrap things up here, I would love for you to, you've addressed your experiences, but just your takeaway from having had the opportunity to work in so many different environments internationally, that opportunity is not given to many. That must be a really nice thing to have.
It's a tremendous gift, and I think really, it's the notion we really are all one. We have this illusion that we call race, and you know, scientists have now proven DNA wise that grandmother in Cambodia and I may be more closely related than you and I from on our basic level, on our DNA level, and. You know, what I perceive as being big differences between her and I are really very small differences. You know, her love of her grandchildren, her appreciation that her grandchildren were going to have a safer place to live. That is so heartwarming. And also just the appreciation of how good we have it in this country. Even the poor in this country have so much more materially than the middle class in most countries, to really understand that. It's a real gift.
Well, thank you so much, Constance. I'm Lynn Hadley, your host with Talking Story, and we've been fortunate enough today to talk with Constance Awaisenen. Thank you so much for what you do and sharing it with us today.
My pleasure to be here. Thank you, Lynn.